New research from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds that fewer teenage girls are becoming mothers. The birth rate for American teenagers, that's ages 15 to 19, has fallen 6%. And that means it's now at the lowest level in seven decades, basically two generations. Why? Well, we're going to try to figure it out. Tessa Walsh is with us. She became a mom when she was 15, and that was 22 years ago, and she joins us from Portland, Oregon. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tessa, can I ask you that simple question? Why do you think this is? Why is teenage pregnancies down to its lowest level in 70 years?
Well, I hope that kids are getting, you know, more aware of sex education and the difficulties in, you know, raising children on their own and, you know, choosing to go to college and better themselves in their careers before they choose to have children of their own.
Well, let me ask your daughter, Eliana Pariso, now a 22-year-old nursing student at Lane Community College in Eugene, Oregon. Obviously, you're going the higher education, Eliana. Do you think that's because of better sexual education? Are adults being more forthcoming or perhaps more open with our teenagers?
I think so. And it's like with the times right now, it's difficult. So it's people want to further their education.
Okay, now joining us also as well, Deborah Hauser, let's bring you into this conversation, Executive Vice President of Advocates for Youth from Alexandria, Virginia. You know, Deborah, statistics are just numbers on a page. Do we have any evidence that tells us why this is, what is working and what is not in bringing down teen pregnancies?
Good morning. Yeah, actually we do. We know that there are a number of factors that are helping to reduce the teen birth rate. And to sustain that for the last 3 years, the rate's come down for 3 years. A couple things. This is a complicated issue, and so it takes, you know, multiple strategies. And I think in the last number of years, the United States has begun to embrace some of those. But the first and most important issue, I think both of the women spoke about just recently, which is that the economy is on a downturn. And we know historically that when the economy is poor, women make a decision often to delay childbearing and to get more education so that they can earn enough money to support their children. So the rate is actually down. The birth rate is actually down, not just for teens, but also 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds. The other thing that we do know, again, both women were talking about sex education, and it's really, really important. There's been a huge shift in the United States away from ideology driving public health to science and evidence driving public health sex education. So
meaning that you have fewer and fewer abstinence programs.
Exactly. During much of the Clinton administration, all of the Bush administration, we spent $1.5 billion in abstinence-only education, education that only promotes abstinence and prohibits teaching young people about the health benefits of contraception. We know these programs don't work. There's good evidence. There was a congressionally mandated study that showed these programs didn't work. And consequently, when the Obama administration came in, the policy was changed. And there is now about $200 million a year, federal dollars a year, fueling evidence-based teen pregnancy and sex education programs. And some of this money is the first ever dedicated federal funding for comprehensive sex education. So young people are getting information about relationships, healthy relationships, good communication. They're getting information about abstinence, and they're also getting information about contraception and condoms. And consequently, we see the more young people are waiting to have sex.
Uh-huh. Waiting to have sex completely, let alone risking pregnancy. But let me test out what you're just saying, Deborah, mm-hmm. with Eliana, 22 years old. I'm sure you heard what Deborah just said. Do you feel like you got more information, not just from your mother, who was a teenage mom, but from your sex education programs in your schools?
I do. I remember my teacher, like, she taught us or gave us information about a couple different contraceptives, not just one. And we talked about, like, the different male parts, female parts, and watched the birthing of a baby. And it wasn't just, don't do this. We got information about it.
It was giving you the information and letting you make your own choice?
Yes.
Is that how you characterize it? Well, let me ask your mom. Tessa, you became a mom when you were 15 years old. I cannot even imagine how difficult that was for you. I wonder if that influenced the kind of conversations you had with your daughter.
Oh, absolutely.
I was always open and honest with my daughter. As a matter of fact, I bought her a bag full of condoms when she was in seventh or eighth grade. Said, here you go. I don't think you're doing this, but, you know, your friends might be, so pass them out to everybody.
And you didn't, I mean, there's always a fear among some parents in the United States that if they are that open about sex, if they give their kids contraceptives, it's actually going to encourage them to have sex at an early age.
Well, I think kids are going to do it regardless if we, you know, have the conversations with them or we don't. So they're better to be informed and prepared for the decisions that they make.
All right. Well, Deborah Hauser, what exactly do we know in terms of the statistics about what Tessa just said? Deborah Hauser, Executive Vice President of Advocates for Youth from Alexandria, Virginia. You say that cutting down on the number of abstinence programs has contributed to this. Is it also the case that it helps, talking more about these things helps teenagers make
Absolutely.
Better decisions?
Absolutely. Parents are the number one sex educators of their young people, and there is very good research that shows when you provide young people with the information that they need and when you talk about contraception and condoms before they become sexually active, they're much more likely to use condoms at first sex and to continue using them after that. So Tessa is absolutely 100% right. There's a myth in this country that we have to break, that if you provide information to young people, it causes them to have sex. And that, to follow that logic, it means that sex education or parent-child communication causes promiscuity, so to speak. But that's like saying umbrellas cause rain. What we know from young people is that they want the respect, they want information, they want us to have a social bargain or a contract with them, a social contract that says, look, if we provide you with all the information and tools that you need, and we respect your ability, your agency to make good and healthy decisions, that in fact you will make good and responsible decisions about your sexual health as you grow older. And what we've seen is that actually works. Young people feel respected, they feel trusted, and they want to live up to our expectation.
All right, well, let me test this out again with our young person, Eliana Paraiso, now 22 years old, so not a teenager anymore. But when your mother in seventh or eighth grade handed you a bag full of condoms, did you, in fact, talk with your friends about that? Did you hand them out?
I didn't necessarily hand them out, but some of them were aware that I had them. So I guess if they did need them, they could know who to come to.
And did they?
Not in when I had them, because it was seventh and eighth grade, so I didn't have any friends coming to me at the time.
But later they came to you, probably when it was too late and the expiration age was passed. Eliana Paraiso, 22-year-old nursing student at Lane Community College in Eugene, Oregon. Tessa Walsh is her mom. She had Eliana when she was 15 years old. That's 22 years ago. She joins us from Portland, Oregon. And Deborah Hauser is the Executive Vice President of Advocates for Youth from Alexandria, Virginia. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
I'm talking about the low levels of teen pregnancy, down to the lowest level in 70 years, two generations, and trying to figure out why. If you have ideas on what may be causing the low level of teenage pregnancies, we want to hear them at 8778-MY-TAKE. And we've been hearing from you about cell phones in cars. The National Transportation Safety Board says we shouldn't be using cell phones at all if we're driving. Rita writes this at our Facebook page. I have no problem with a ban on phones while driving. It is not a necessity. It's a privilege that's been taken advantage of. Some of you are skeptical, though, that an official ban on cell phones would work.
This is Jeffrey from Lansing, Michigan. If they pass the no cell phone in the automobile law, it'll be just like the drunk driving law. Only politicians and police will be able to get away with it.
To be clear, this isn't a law. This is a non-binding recommendation from the National Transportation Safety Board. Nobody has proposed it as a law yet, Jeffrey, so don't worry. And we also want to get your thoughts about the Iraq War, which ended today. We want you to look back and say, tell us, was it worth it? You can give us your take at 8778-MY-TAKE. I'm Celeste Headlee. John Hockenberry is out today. This is The Takeaway.